Off the Ball. GAA.
Probably booing.
Text me last night at 6 o'clock. Any sign of these power rankings? No, Pat. You won't be getting 8 hours to prep to rip me asunder. You'll get to see it the morning of.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
And good luck trying to keep any kind of check on the hype around Sam Prendergast at the moment. So 20 points from Prendergast in that game against the Bristol Bears yesterday. 5 out of 5 conversions. And the one question mark that there was about Prendergast, maybe, especially when people have been talking about this Crowley versus Prendergast debate, is whether he has the pace and maybe the ingenuity to take the ball to the line and to run. Mm. And then just disgusting when Jordy Barrett offloads the ball to him and he decides to throw a dummy and run straight through the middle of the Bristol defence for a try that basically opened up the game in that 7-minute period where Leinster won the game in the second half. So I don't know how you guys felt about it, but it's very, very hard to dampen the hype about Prendergast when you see the way he's playing at the moment.
Yeah, he's pretty good. That was very exciting. It was 7-all and obviously Leinster had left their cavalry on the bench. Their bench
Bob
had
squad.
Caelan Doris and R.G. Snyman and Jordy Barrett on it.
And Porter.
It's like, is this the best bench in European rugby history? I mean, it's getting up there. Because none of these players are past their peak. Like, you know, you would say they're all actually coming into some kind of a peak at the moment. Good shout that Doris ends up being captain of the Lions. Snyman made a break in the second half. You're like, his knee's fine.
I didn't know he could run that fast.
No, he was running as fast. Like, who did he offload to? It was one of the backs.
It was Prendergast. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Directly.
Yeah.
Who was keeping up with them. So they had 2 yellow cards in the first half. Leinster, we'll talk about this with James Tracy in a while, but they were very good. It's fair to say they were very good. And Bristol are a good team. Now, obviously, they're complaining in the papers about the salary cap and English rugby not being the powerhouse that it used to be and pointing out that Exeter were the last team to reach a final and that was in the COVID year and there's no chance of any of the English teams doing anything. I'm not quite ready to consign all the English teams.
I think they're all buddies who had their financial concerns themselves when it came to salary cap. Saracens probably looked the best of the English teams of the weekend just gone by.
Big win, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Bath were decent in the comeback against La Rochelle on Friday night. I don't know if you saw the Bath fans giving out about Ron Nagara's language. Did you see this?
No.
Screw you, Bath fans. Swearing is a sign of a bad vocabulary. I'm like... And look, I got carried away there, you know, because I'm playing.
Bath was that posh, by the way.
Yeah, Bath's very posh. Yeah.
Have you seen The Wreck?
I've seen The Wreck and I've been there, but the accent is a bit more posh.
It's more West Country, of course. Yeah, but I suspect the people who are giving abuse to maybe they didn't come to adulthood in the local area. Anyway, it's just insane. Why could you hear the head coach of the opposition? Because the fans weren't making enough noise at the legendary wreck there. Let's be having you, Bath fans.
Weren't too many Bristol fans at the Leinster game either. I don't know if the kickoff time, 5:30 on a Sunday, was a bit of an effect on that.
It's not a great time. And I don't know, was there also storm warnings and don't travel warnings in place? So there might have been. I think we were pretty happy the game went ahead in the end. So bad weekend for England, good weekend for the Irish team. Should talk about Munster and Connacht.
Yeah,
brilliant,
definitely. Connacht, there was a load of landmarks for Connacht at the weekend. Probably the most important one was Shane Mullins, because we were interested to see how he was going to get on, having been so good for the Ireland Sevens. Hat-trick on debut is probably the perfect way to start, isn't it?
Yeah.
He looked very, very electric every time that he picked up the ball, and he gives an extra dimension to their attack as well. They're able to get 2 young players capped for the first time in Sean Nocton and Fiacre Barrett, who are 2 local lads that were coming in to win their first caps. Santiago Cordeo got his first try for Connacht, which has been a long time coming. And Paul Boyle has become the top scoring forward in Connacht history, 24 try in 100 appearances for him. So they racked up 43 points, got a bonus point, and they'll be very, very happy with the way they've started.
It's very much not a full strength Connacht team either. Oh. There was no Bundiaki, no McHansen. Oshie McCormack's worth of mention as well, a guy who struggled a lot with injury over the last while. He made his first cap, I think, a year and a half ago, and he's made a second cap at the weekend. Colin Ford was brilliant again. He was on with us a little while ago. It's only a matter of time before he gets a call up, surely, to the Irons, but he's brilliant.
Not how I feel about this co-captain thing, but aside from that.
Who was co-captains?
So Kyle Ford is one of the co-captains. Okay. They've moved on from Jack Carthy as captain now. I'm trying to think who the other was.
Caelan Blade, maybe?
Was it Blade or Boyle? It was one or the other.
Blade made his 200th appearance to go with Boyle's 100th. So, as you say, landmarks all around. And then Munster, obviously, like, you must be feeling pretty happy if you're a Munster fan this morning that the first big test of the new regime, they have really massively buffeted up the coaching ticket over the course of the international break and the fruits of what we're seeing. We know that Munster are very streaky. They're a team who are streaky when things are bad and they're a team who are really streaky when things are good at the moment. And things look pretty good. So you'd be very confident that a corner has been turned at just the right time between now and the Six Nations. If they were to continue performing and getting back the players who are coming back from injury the way they are, then all of a sudden the season turns around. Very happy after a Munster win at the weekend. James Trace is with us. We'll just briefly chat about Munster before we get to the Leinster situation. I made the point earlier that they're streaky. They're streaky when things are bad, but they're really streaky when things are good. And so if they were able to get up a bit of a head of steam, they have players coming back, they have a bit of chip on their shoulder, this isn't... suddenly they're dangerous again, very quickly, if a few results go their way.
I never thought, like... Thomond Park on a European night is always going to be a dangerous place and a tough place to get a result. The group, they've easily enough good players to be able to beat or at least be very close to nearly every team in the European competition. So I'm not surprised by that result in the weekend. Good to see Daly getting back with the form. That's probably a contender for try of the season. Lovely touch, bit of the Brian O'Driscoll.
Totally, yeah.
Little flick over the top about it. It was
fun. When you do it once, it looks great. When you do it the second time, I was like, what?
Yeah. But no, I feel like once they get their line out right, and the sauce stat about with and without Peter Omani in the line, I think it was like 76% without him and 100% with him. Now, I don't know, he's only on there for a couple of games, but it does make a big difference to their set piece and momentum, because a lot of their game is built around pressure, but also being excellent around set piece and everything to do that.
The bit where a coach leaves in the middle of the season or leaves at any point and the people who were left behind take control. Talk to us a bit about what galvanising impact that could have, because again, from the outside, people are like, oh, this is a shambles. But inside it, I presume, there's very calm heads who are saying, well, we're still here and we're not throwing the season away by any stretch of the imagination, and actually we're going to start answering the critics from outside. So what would that actually be like for them to be going through at the moment?
Well, one, we don't know what the catalyst was to you know, it's assumed for a moment it was, you know, the senior player group that decided that it was better to move on from the current coach and stuff. And if that was the case, then, you know, it's kind of, lads, let's batten in the hatches. This is our team now, and we're responsible for every result that goes out there. We're responsible for everything that's done during the week. And, there's something about the kind of brotherhood that would bring that would, you know, maybe just get a little bit more out of the group than what they've seen. Well, if you're not necessarily on the same page as your coach and you're not necessarily buying into certain messages or certain things that you're doing in training, you know, rugby's an unusual sport where you kind of have to trick your mind and your body to do stuff that is against your natural nature, because it's such a dangerous game. So if you're anyway not 100% bought in, it shows fairly quickly. And I feel like when, you know, these kind of red herring events happen, and a group can be galvanised, all of a sudden, all on the same page, all can do special things. And let's not forget, Munster were top of the league last year and won it the year before. So
that's
like
the point,
it's not like they don't have a good group of players.
Yeah,
it's for whatever reason, they're just not singing off the same hymn sheet, and they've made a decision now. So there's no reason why this group of players can't go on and get some silverware this season.
Can I ask you about the line-out calling then?
Yeah.
Is this something that players can learn as they go along? Because obviously Tadhg Byrne has taken on extra responsibility, and we're trying to work out who the line-out caller is going to be for Ireland. And Peter O'Mahony will probably become a more peripheral figure for the Irish team. Obviously, Munster trying to sort that out as well. So you'd know from, you know, the hooker side of things, yeah. But can someone kind of develop the skills of being a good line-out caller?
100%. It does take time, though, you know, and I suppose it's like anything. Some people get it quicker than others, have a good knack for it. There is elements to it, though. It's kind of, for a caller, your call is only as good as the throw and the drill, being the lift and the jump, as well as the kind of the fourth pillar being, you know, given a good opportunity by winning the right space. But there's also the play that needs to happen and where the field position and context. So there is probably a few layers to it that it come with experience. It does help when you have Peter O'Mahony in there, and you know, and an exceptional line-out option, or, you know, like just an outlier, you know, like Devin Toner made a career out of being an exceptional option. But also, if you watch the La Rochelle game on the weekend, and you know, the call wasn't in free space, so they completely marked up against Bath, but they had Will Skelton front lifting the back lift and throws him out of his hands, and all of a sudden you've created, because he's so tall, you've created an extra foot of wiggle room. And then the call doesn't matter. All that matters is that the throw just hits in between that window, the extra foot, and they end up scoring.
A lot of margin for error for your
throw. So there's, you know, there's a couple of things you can help yourself out with by having a good, appropriately picked pack in terms of the balance of, if you're people who certain attributes, whether being around ball carry, ruck, breakdown, and then having your lineup guys as well, that you get the perfect mission match in there. But for Tadhg, he's kind of been on and off calling since we were, you know, early on in our career. So it's not something that...
it's not alien to him.
Alien to him. But doing at the top end, again, with different teams and different break or different kind of setups of players is what's going to be an adjustment for him, is figuring out, okay, if I do have a less line out savvy pack, how do I navigate that in terms of my calling?